Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we begin, wanted to remind you all about the Union Community, a private safe space for goalkeepers to engage, educate, and entertain one another away from the vitriol of social media. To download free, go to the Union Community on Apple or Google Play stores or www.theunionsports.com. Thanks a lot for making the Union possible, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Magid, live from a recovering from a rainstorm, West Hollywood, California. With me out in Woodland Hills, California, dealing with the debris of all the branches and the plants outside because we had wind and rain and other forms of weather that we're not used to. The one and only 99 World Cup winner, Saskia Weber. You doing all right over there?
I'm doing good. I have a gecko that has moved into the house. Wow. Probably because of the rain. I don't know. And I can't get him. He's up. I have really high ceilings and he's made a home and we named him Louie and he's hanging out right now. So it's interesting. I live in the wilderness now.
What a great segue into our guest today.
Yeah, right.
Talking about reptiles and lizards and all sorts of fun, all sorts of fun stuff going on because we have out of Florida Premier, the goalkeeping director, Kristen Russell, joining us. She probably knows a lot about lizards out there.
Oh, we have so many of those here.
Yeah, well, you have those 2 feet ones that are like walk across the field, like something out of a horror movie. So,
I appreciate you guys having me. Very, very excited to get into our discussion today.
Absolutely.
I mean, well, we're really excited about it. You know, Kristen, obviously you're doing great work out there in Florida and everything like that. For people who kind of aren't familiar with kind of your, you know, your background and kind of your, as like they like to say in the UK, your pathway to the youth game. Why don't you talk a little bit about how you kind of transitioned from college to the youth?
Yeah, I guess for most, my pathway's kind of unconventional for coaches. After college, I played a little bit professionally in Iceland. And then when I moved back to the States, I started my own goalkeeping academy. And through that time, I found there was a lot of need for a certain type of philosophy and methods that are missing at the youth level. So I took a leap of faith and entered the youth game. And I haven't looked back ever since.
I mean, we absolutely love that. I mean, Saskia, you know, obviously you spent some time in the youth game as a goalkeeping director over at a club here in Southern California. And we even spoke about it, just the lack of, and let's just let the cat out of the bag here, the lack of representation in the youth game when it comes to coaching.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to quality goalkeeping, yes, absolutely. And the lack of time you have to actually train those players as well. You know, when I was training out, when I was coaching out here at the club, it was like, okay, you got him for 30 minutes, like twice a week. And, you know, it's just that identification of they need more, you know, you wouldn't tell a field player, okay, you've got him for 30 minutes and then expect them to perform every weekend and then come back and yell at me.
Exactly.
I don't know.
And by the way, Kristen, feel free to step in any time. Like, you don't need to wait for us to ask you a question or anything like that.
Yeah,
but like,
absolutely.
I do want to ask you though, because you know, obviously, you said that when you were done playing pro, you started your own goalkeeping academy. Did you do that out of the fact that you saw a need that wasn't being filled at the local youth clubs?
Yeah, I think that was part of it. And also it's when you're fresh, you know, you're done playing, it's trying to figure out what's the next step in life. And, you know, I understood goalkeeping and I kind of just went down that realm. And I didn't think I would stick with coaching for the rest of my career, but it's something that I grew very passionate about. And I realized that I'm able to connect with players on a different level than, you know, most that I've seen within my area, at least.
You know, I mean, you bring up a good point in regards to the connection, you know, Saskia, and you said, you know, one of the things that even at the college game, you know, a lot of the times, not that everybody had to have played at the level that you did, which is the highest level, but the fact that there were, especially at these elite programs, you know, players that were aspiring to get to the level that you played at, do you feel like that helped them build a bond that was a little bit more difficult with other coaches in the past?
No, I do. And I think that, you know, for kids out there and listening and parents, like if your kid isn't aspiring to go to, whether it's go pro, whether it's go to the college next level, even the next level in club and stuff like that, again, going back to what I was talking about, it's imperative that they have that coaching. And, you know, we're seeing a change in that, but if you're not getting like time as a goalkeeper specifically, you know, one-on-one or in a group dynamic with goalkeepers or with even with a goalkeeper coach with your team, it's going to make that transition incredibly difficult.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and I think, you know, just the simple fact is that, you know, Kristen, you kind of went through the system, the way it kind of was. Yeah. You kind of saw it all the way from, you know, college to the pro game. You go back to these youth players, when you start your own academy, you're not coming from concept, you're coming from reality of based on like, hey, this is what worked, this is what didn't work, you know, let me show you how you can apply these.
Yeah, and I think what's so fascinating about the goalkeeping position specifically is the position's always evolving. So when we played, it was completely different than what the kids are experiencing now. So you hear about the modern day goalkeeper. That wasn't a thing when we were playing. So I think what's so fascinating about, you know, coaching the goalkeeper position is it's constantly evolving and you have to adapt with that as well. So that's something that I really, really enjoyed learning when I was, you know, full time with my goalkeeping academy, is just kind of learning the new methods and fine tuning that and trying to figure out how that can blend into what my philosophy currently was at that time.
Yeah. It's so funny that you bring that up because, you know, we were literally just talking about that before we started on the air, just in regards to physically, yeah. Saskia, some of the things that we're teaching now. Our bodies, they haven't done it at a competitive level, you know. I mean, look, I'm still playing right now, but I'll tell you what, when I try to spread and block, it does not look.
Seriously.
This is probably why I have a deep wound on my left leg right now.
If I did a block save, it was probably because I came for a ball, I tripped, and I ended up in an awkward position. it was never anything that it was taught. And so, yeah, and that's the whole thing about goalkeeping and goalkeeping coaching. So we've talked about this a bunch of times. Like, you know, it's constantly changing. Even for me, when I got back into coaching and then, you know, I was at UCLA, like I had to adapt and I had to learn, mm-hmm. like these are the new philosophies, and it's a gray area. It's what works mm-hmm. best for the individual, and to be able to teach different techniques and when to use them in different situations. But I had to learn as well. I'm like, oh, you know, and now how much, you know, the goalkeepers implemented into the game is totally different than when I played. Yeah, you know, I was hanging out back there.
hanging out, just picking daisies at the World Cup level. You know, that's what they do.
If it were that easy, right?
I wouldn't go that far, but yeah.
I mean, well, I don't know. That team was a pretty big juggernaut. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, that's true. There's sometimes okay.
How much else? I do want to talk about that with you, Kristen, though, because the thing is, mm-hmm. is that, like, you know, the youth game is so different than coaching the yeah. college game, and the fact that, like, you're dealing with children versus young women, you know.
Right.
And I find that a lot of college coaches struggle with that. You know, they go to the youth game, they either work in their own private academy or they, you know, they start working at a club and they start trying to train them like they were training their college kids, and yeah. it just doesn't work.
Yeah. I think it also comes down to, I mean, even with the youth clubs, I mean, they're not hiring experience. Like, for instance, I'm in a director role. I feel like we're not having enough experienced coaches that are in those roles that are well-versed in the youth game. Mm-hmm. So you're getting, you know, maybe someone that just stopped playing pro and they want to use this as a stepping stone to get to the next level in their coaching career. I don't think we have enough coaches that just want to be at the youth game and are working on their craft and their philosophy and development on how to get the most out of their youth players. So I think that, you know, that is kind of the disconnect between yeah. each level in the pathway in coaching.
No, I totally agree, because you get a lot of young kids, whether they're fresh out of college or whatever, and they go into, listen, when I spent time with the in the youth program, I learned a lot. Like I learned, for me, my craft, how to really actually analyze things, how to break things down simplistically, how to really explain things in the proper tone, the proper way for myself, you know, going from pro or national team right to professional or right to the top level college. That would have been great, but I think that I don't think I would have been as effective of a coach had I not spent time teaching the youth players and really honing my craft. But at the same time, being open to everything and learning.
One of the things that I'll say about that is, Kristen, you brought up the fact of, like, somebody who just finished playing pro. I find a lot of times, and again, I'm not bad mouthing all the youth directors out there in regards to
Oh, no.
clubs. A lot of times it's just, you don't know any better, or it's an afterthought because it's not your world. But a lot of times it's like, oh, who's the goalkeeper coach at the local college? Yeah, we'll hire them. That's who's going to come in and do
And
the
a lot
stuff.
of times it's availability.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, like, how many top quality goalkeeper coaches are out there and have the bandwidth to coach to do what they're doing and coach club and you know, on that scale and to find the right player. So yeah, unfortunately it is, who's a local kid at the local college? Do you want to come out and kick some balls at my goalkeepers?
Yeah,
Like, unfortunately, that is true.
yeah.
I
And I
mean,
think,
and
like, go ahead.
no, Kristen, you go ahead. This is your show. You go ahead.
Thank
Yeah,
you.
it's all you.
I was gonna say, I think, you know, there's a lot of people that have the title of director, for instance, and it's kind of like their second job. There are not many goalkeeper directors where this is just their full-time job. And luckily enough, for me, I'm fortunate to be in a club where they value that role and that position. And I am full time, and this is my full time job, and this is my sole focus. And I hope, you know, with time, more clubs, you know, start to see that and value this position more so in their club.
I am one of those people. Like, I was a director of goalkeeping, wasn't full time. And I'm like, I have a job. Like, I'm like, you know, and then to turn around and be like, well, you know, you could take like three teams. I'm like, if I take three teams, then my job as director of goalkeeping, I won't have time to coach goalkeepers, you
Right,
know. So
exactly. Mm-hmm.
which is it? And you have to value that position. No longer at that club, but I just but yes, absolutely. You know, that's amazing to be full-time director.
Yeah. And I think when you have someone that is just doing that as a full-time position, you're able to focus more on the culture of your program, your philosophies, your methods, how you're teaching each individual kid and as a collective. So there's so much work that goes in behind the scenes on building your program. And if you don't have this as your sole focus, you're not going to be able to achieve as much as you could in your player's development.
I feel like, Kristen, you kind of got a benefit in regards to the fact that, like, by starting your own academy before you took a director position at a youth club, you had some time to kind of build your philosophy and your methodology so that when you came into the club, you're not starting from scratch. It's like, oh, what do I do? And I feel like that's the problem with a lot of youth clubs is, like, they just hire somebody to come in and they're figuring it out as they go along, including myself, because I'm very much was in that boat.
Yeah, I think what was so beneficial for me is, like you said, like I started my own academy and I've had it for about 10 years, but for the first few years, I kind of was freelancing with several local clubs. So I was kind of able to see the dynamic of several different clubs and how they ran their organization. And then ultimately that's benefited me in a way that I never even thought was possible when I decided to do this full time. Because it's changed my perspective and been able to see, you know, issues that need to be fixed or opportunities that haven't been explored, to be able to do those types of things within a club setting.
And I think one of the things, as we kind of get into the topic, and today, guys, we're talking about building a new goalkeeper culture. I mean, it's just a perfect segue right here. But before we do that, Saskia, I just kind of want to ask you, like, when you were in the youth game, like, what were some of the challenges that you faced? Because you were coming in and kind of, for lack of a better term, kind of starting all over because it'd been a while since you'd been in the game?
I think it was just the disconnect between the head coaches that ran teams and, again, you know, like Chris had said, not having that full-time job and not having to really dive in and create a culture. It was really fly by the seat of your pants, you know, coming in and not, you know, trying to find out how their games went that weekend. You're talking about a lot of teams and what's going on. And because it's not your full-time gig, it's you're kind of chasing your tail in a sense, trying to play catch up all the time. And then just not having enough time with the goalkeepers and the coaches not understanding goalkeepers. And I think having the time and being able to be there all the time and full time, you can create that. You can create that connection. You can understand the individual team philosophies. Not every team plays the same way. I mean, you got 30 something teams with different coaches and stuff. Different philosophies, different systems. Why is this goalkeeper not excelling in with this team? What is going on? What's the disconnect? And if you're not full time, you don't have the time. It's just not there. You're I said, you're playing catch up constantly. And so it was that disconnect. And it was literally getting yelled at. Like, why does so and so keep making this mistake? I'm like, I don't have enough time with them or your team.
Exactly.
So let's dive right into this. Kristen, you put this amazing presentation together right over here.
I tried.
Dusky always claps. She knows how much effort and time it takes to do these.
And
trust me, I do too. It's crazy. So
yeah,
we're talking today about building a new goalkeeper culture. This is actually a topic that you kind of brought up. You know, when we were chatting, you're like, hey, I could come on and talk about something from an X's and O's standpoint, but I think a lot of people have done that. And I think this could be really beneficial to a lot of people out there who, you know, are moving into a new environment that they maybe have never coached at before. So first off, kind of, what do you mean by culture?
So culture, to me, culture means it's just a combination of values, beliefs, and attitudes that kind of create a unique identity, I guess, within a program. It's both individual and collective. And it's just shaping the dynamic of your group or your program. And it could be negative or positive. But, you know, for here, what we've been focusing on is that positive environment.
I love the fact, you know, I mean, not love from a standpoint of like, I'm excited about it, but I love the fact that you brought up from a negative standpoint too, Saskia, because that is something is you can come in and you can create a toxic environment as well with something that was working.
No, absolutely. But it's important that the culture is it's monumental because you want that philosophy to resonate across all goalkeepers, all teams and everything. It's a base for what you're built. Then the individual, you deal with the individual techniques and what you need to work on. But if everybody comes in and has this mentality, this culture, this idea of what's expected of them, and how to handle themselves off the field to on the field, that's incredibly important.
Yeah, I think just from like just piggybacking off that, you know, at the end of the day at the youth level, like, yes, our goal is to get as many players to play at the collegiate and professional level as we can. But at the end of the day, we also know that a lot of those players, this might be the highest level they play at, and that's okay. But it's also teaching them life skills as well.
Absolutely.
They need to learn how to work in a group. And a lot of the times with goalkeepers, it's so individualized and we kind of have to teach them how to be a team within a team, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
You know, and I like the fact, you know, here, you know, as we kind of just talk about these different discussion points right here, you've got culture and identity, you know, is one of the things that we're going to go over. And when I think of identity, I don't just think about like the goalkeeper, you know, collaborative group's identity, but I think about your own individual identity and the fact that these young players are discovering their own personal identity as they're going through this journey with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you're molding that and you have to take, you're like, that's why I said on the field and off the field, like you're a teacher, you know, and it doesn't just start and stop when they put their gloves on and their boots on and come on the field. And you are molding young minds and you're 100% right. Not all of them are going to move on, but what life skills are we going to teach them at the same time through sports, through goalkeeping?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk a little bit.
Go ahead,
Kristen.
Go ahead, Michael. Sorry, I interrupt. I was just going to go on to my slides. If you have any questions, go ahead.
I want to just go right here to these starting points right here, because like you're kind of talking about the biggest impacts here. So why don't you break down a little bit of that?
Yeah. So this year I just moved to this club probably 8 months ago. So this is very fresh and new, and we're still experimenting with certain ideas and how we can, you know, create a positive culture and environment for our goalkeepers. So when I first accepted this role, I had a couple months to kind of sit back and, you know, identify problems and opportunities within, you know, the club or, you know, the current market. Because at the time, you know, the past 2 years, I was living in Jacksonville working for another club. So I've known the Tampa Bay area extremely well. I've lived here for a very long time. So I kind of had a sense of, you know, certain things that players were looking for from a goalkeeping program, what they wanted to get out of it. And I tried shaping my methodology and approach based around those problems and opportunities and how I can try and solve those issues.
Did you get with you? It's been how many months? Eight months. That kickback of, well, our last coach, or well, like, you know, you, and trying to explain to them, you're not trying to like dismantle the teachings that they've had. You're trying to add more tools to their toolbox and highlight the, you know, their strengths and work on their weaknesses. But you get that. Like when I went to the club, it was like, well, my last coach or my high school coach or this or that, you know, and you get that from kids, that kickback, you know?
Yeah. I think one thing that I would, cause I've been to a couple of clubs now. So, you know, I had so many conversations over the phone with current coaches and directors that are at the club, asking them or their opinion on how things can change within the program and the department. I also asked players, and parents, like, what do they feel needs to change within the program? So, you know, there wasn't much pushback because I was conscious on making subtle changes. Nice. And prioritizing the changes that I wanted, that I felt needed to be addressed immediately. So there's still certain things that I want to create and bring to this program, but I'm doing it in a way where it's not too overwhelming for everyone. So, you know, structure was important. You know, programming was important, and obviously creating our culture and identity as a program.
You know, I love the fact that you just said there about the subtle changes, because I think that's one of the biggest mistakes. And I think it's a mistake that I made when I was, you know, took over as a goalkeeping director at one club years back, is that I was like, well, Clint, this is how I want to do it. And we're going to do it like this now. Yeah. And some of the parents are like, that's not how we do it. So-and-so's training with so-and-so. I don't like this, blah, blah, blah. You know, if I had gone about it a different way, maybe it would have been a little bit more positive from the get-go.
Well, I think what Chris says is communication's key, you know, in that subtle shift and change, like find out what's working, find out what isn't working, and have an open line of communication, even with the players, so you have that back and forth to be able to explain your philosophy or why you're doing something, and to the parents and to the coaches. So they get it and they can see both sides. It's not it's not just shoving it down their throat, Mike.
Well, yeah.
My way or the highway.
No, but the problem I faced though was I don't want to say even a lack of communication, but apathy, Kristen, from the team coaches, like identify problems and opportunities. I don't know, you figure it out. Like we've always done it this way. Why do we need to change this?
Yeah. And I think like it shows on the slide, shares similar vision and approach. I think the only way for this to work is to find a club that shares a similar vision and approach, and it meshes and aligns well. Like I've been at clubs where, you know, I've tried implementing, you know, the strategies that I'm going to be sharing with you today. But there was going to be pushback because at the end of the day, you know, the higher ups didn't believe in that type of coaching or teaching, where I'm, you know, with Florida Premier, it's honestly, there's hardly been any pushback. Everyone's been extremely open and willing to understand more about the goalkeeper position and the constraints and limitations that we've had for so long. So I think, you know, ultimately it comes down to the club that you're at as well. They have to share a similar vision as you do.
And I think, you know, one of the toughest things, you know, Saskia, is that especially so many young coaches, like they just want to get a job. They just want to get a job. So they'll say anything in an interview, or they'll back down and go with whatever it is because they just want to get the opportunity to get the job. And then they end up going there and realizing that they've kind of put themselves in a bad position because they've already in the interview, you know, said they're willing to go with this or they're willing to do this or whatever. Right. And then they start bringing up these ideas and they go, well, what, you didn't bring that up when we hired you. What's this all about?
Well, I think it's more like, are you going in with a set plan, with a philosophy? Obviously you have to give and take here and stuff like that, but, or are you just going in to get a job and say, okay, I'll go take the goalkeepers and do what, you know, whatever you tell me to do and kick the balls at them in the corner, you know? So that's the difference between being a goalkeeper trainer and being a coach and a director.
Yeah. I want to move into the whole positive environment thing, because especially at the foundational ages, it's just so, so important. I can't tell you, Kristen, how many times I've seen little boys and girls, and it's like they don't want to be there because it's not fun.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think we've all heard, you know, like horror stories of negative environments. And at the end of the day, it's negatively impacting their development. I mean, who wants to go into a training session where they're going to get yelled at or they're going to feel belittled? Yeah. I mean, no one wants that. So, I mean, to maximize your players' development, you know, you have to take into consideration the environment you're presenting your players. They need to feel comfortable. They need to feel safe. They need to feel like they can make mistakes and not have repercussions for it. So in order to do that, especially coming into a new club and environment, I mean, I knew I had to lead by example. And by doing that, it was building a connection with each individual player, you know, gaining trust, you know, and making sure that you're consistent in your messaging and actions. Don't just say something, follow up with it. Otherwise, you're not going to gain that trust and respect in your players. And then the last two are super important. You know, you want to empower them to problem solve. You know, if there is critical thinking, I think, you know, you can do technical sessions, but at the end of the day, when you put them into game in a game environment, they have to be able to make decisions on their own, and you have to empower them to do that. So that was a huge one and something that I've focused a lot of attention on since coming to this club, especially. And lastly, it's just advocating. I mean, if you're going to be the leader of a program, you need to make sure that they feel heard and seen, and they see that you're collaborating with coaches. You know, you're having conversations about their development with them. So it's something that, you know, you have to lead by example. You can't just say all of these things. So this is kind of my strategy and approach and how I created a positive environment from the get-go.
Yeah. We have a question in the comment section here, so I'm just going to throw it up there, right there from Antonio Mariel. And Antonio, please let us know where in the world you're watching the show from. We always love to hear. He goes, sorry, I pushed the send key mistakenly. My question to you all is, the mesocycle training are divided into 4-week blocks, such as technical skills on footworking associated with handling, positioning specific during BU in possession and out of possession. What do you all think?
What's BU?
That I don't know. Okay. Antonio, if you can tell us what BU is. Boston University? I was like,
that's what I was thinking. I was like, my sister-in-law went to BU.
Mississippi Hattiesburg. Okay. Got it.
Okay. Ahead, put Kristen. The question up again.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm going to throw that back up there. Right there. I'm glad you understand it, because I'm not going to be able to answer. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I think from just my programming standpoint, so, like with my ECNL goalkeepers, and I was going to discuss this later on in the presentation, but with our periodization and programming, I actually base our programming off of what the teams are doing. So we do week by week, like we'll have certain topics that we're working on within those cycle blocks. So that's pretty much how we do our programming. But we're doing in and out of possession on a weekly basis, daily basis. And things like that.
B BU stands for build up.
So, yeah, I feel like I was on like a Sesame Street show. Like BU stands for build up.
Yeah, I think that there's a different approach. Like, are you where are you at in your season? Where are you at and stuff? Yeah. When you get into it, like. Like if you have a thing where we're over the next 4 weeks, like we're in preseason, let's say it's college, let's say it's something like that. And, you know, the goalkeeper training, if you have separate goalkeeper training, or if you have something like that, where you have, you're something that you're developing and working on stuff and you're building up to something, you're building up to something and everything, that's fine. But the problem is in season, and especially with club, which they're always in season, you do have to kind of figure out what's going on with the team, because it's the same as like, okay, I do want to work on some stuff, but come Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we have to start integrating the team philosophy and what they're working on because of the game the weekend before, and how to implement the goalkeepers in that. So it's a bit tricky. You can't just go in, depending on where you are, and say, this is what we're going to work on, and this is the buildup, regardless of what's going on. It's kind of a gray area there.
That's a tough thing, you know. And I mean, kind of, I know we've gone off on a little bit of a tangent here, Christian, but I kind of want your opinion of this, because coaching at the youth level, and we're talking about, you know, building a new culture there, the issues at the youth level is that you've got so-and-so's on this page, so-and-so's on this page, so-and-so's on this page, and so-and-so's only been playing for this many months, and this so-and-so was a field player until last week, and so-and-so is an ECNL keeper. And how do you balance all that to make sure that they're all benefiting, you know?
That's, I think, a constant challenge. I think I have a large staff, probably bigger than most clubs do. So, like our ECNL goalkeepers will train together, and then you have your ECNLR, and then you also have, like, your younger ages. So we try and group the levels and ages together. That way they're kind of working in a similar environment. So they're, you know, it's not like someone's just there and they're not being challenged. It's, they're placed in a training environment where they will be challenged based on their current level, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense, you know, because I think, you know, Saskia, especially at the smaller clubs, and I know a lot of people, you know, listening and watching right now, you know, are in these types of situations where they are working at smaller clubs and don't have those types of resources, you know, that Christian's fortunate enough to have, you know, with 17 staff members, you know, kicking a ball.
We're not that big yet.
But they've got the hey, so-and-so couldn't make it to the 6 o'clock, so they're here for the 7 o'clock. Well, so-and-so's 9 years old, and these are 16-year-olds, and this might be a little bit of a challenge here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, so I've kind of set, like, a standard where you can't just show up to whatever, like, there's a schedule, and if for any reason there is scheduling conflicts, like, things have to get approved by the coaches. They can't just come. It's not full reign. So, like, we've had that structure, and we've set that those limitations where these are the sessions that you're being offered. And we're doing that at multiple locations.
But that's also part of culture. That's also
exactly
part of building culture. That's responsibility on and off the field, in life and everything. You know, absolutely. Yeah.
And by the way, that goes to the team coaches as well, too, because I can't tell you how many people I have gotten calls from to work with me. They're like, oh, well, team training conflicts with goalkeeper training at the club, so my coach
my favorite is just being on the field. My favorite is just being on the field and training a crew of goalkeepers, and then two kids walk over and they say, hey, so like, Kelly doesn't want to use us right now, so she sent us to you.
Isn't that great?
And I'm sitting there just like, okay, I'm doing like such an advanced thing with these goalkeepers, and you just sent me a bunch of 9-year-olds. And then my favorite is like, hey, so Pam can't show up this weekend, so I'm gonna play goal. So Kelly sent me over, you know, and they've never played goal in their life before, and I'm training like elite goalkeepers right now. Sorry, Kelly, I'm just using it as an example.
No, but there are some team coaches that honestly like just think goalkeeper training is a gymboree. And they just like, they're just like, oh, there's like, oh, I can send them there for half an hour. Then, you know, I can go grab a coffee, and then I'll come back. And then
My favorite, I've told you, Mike, is when they sent him over, like, they're like, oh, well, you know, Paul's going to play this weekend. Neither one of our goalkeeper can't show up, conflict. So we're just going to put him in goal. So teach him what you can. I sent him back. I'm just like, I'm not teaching you anything. If you want to get in goal, just like, you know, go be an athlete and get in goal. What do you want me to teach him in 30 minutes right now? Except for to confuse him. And now his athletic mindset would have been like, just do what you got to do to keep the ball out of the net. But I've just filled your head with a ton of information in 30 minutes and you're going to screw yourself up. I'm like, just go.
Let's have him overthink now.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I think that's a mistake, you know, Kristen, that a lot of young coaches make when they're building their culture at their club is they focus so much on the technical that kids start getting scared. They're like, well, Coach Kristen told me to do it this way, so I better do it this way. Otherwise, I'm gonna be wrong or whatever, as opposed to just trying to be effective.
Yeah, that's something that we, you know, you still run into, and conflicting opinions, like different coaches. I mean, I honestly am an advocate for players working with other goalkeeper coaches or other coaches. I think it's important to hear other opinions so that helps, you know, you figure out what works best for you. Because my methods might not work best for you, and that's okay. You can find someone else that ultimately can help you with whatever you feel is best suited for your attributes as a player. But yeah, you run into that all the time where, you know, so-and-so said this or so-and-so said that. But that's kind of where exploratory learning comes in. And that's why we empower them to kind of learn things on their own as well.
Yeah.
And field player coaches out there, stick to your schedule. My other favorite is like they give you a timeline. We're going to need the keepers at this point. And you put your session together, you run them through it, and you send them over to the field, and then they come back.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, they don't need us yet.
Yeah, right.
let's look at right here. This is this looks really fancy, Kristen. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on.
It's giving off like science fair vibes, and you know, sorry. I just thought this was fascinating. So when I was preparing for, you know, our talk today, I got to thinking, I'm like, you know, I just obviously every pillar of player development is important. It's a puzzle piece into a puzzle, right? So everything is important. But I was kind of curious to see, you know, our goalkeepers' perspectives and their parents, like what do they view as being more valuable in player development compared to the other pillars. So I sent this out and asked 20 players and 20 parents to submit, you know, a ranking system. So what I did was I took their top two most important attributes. And I found it, honestly, it was very interesting. You know, the parents, obviously you see the technical and tactical, which of course they are important. But what I found even more interesting was our goalkeepers, they value the psychological and the tactical just as important as the technical, which is huge because I feel like if you ask a majority of players, they'll probably say technical is by far one of the most important attributes, which it is. But at the U13 and up, you know, I think psychological and tactical is extremely important and isn't worked enough in those age groups.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see the parents with the psychological. That kind of blows me away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? Like, and then technical. And that from a parent's perspective is I want my kid to be sound and technically perfect, but psychological parents, really?
Yeah, it is really, you know, and again, it was very close with the psychological, but I think because you're always hearing coaches say technical, tactical, but they're not really talking about the other areas of development. Right. Where I really concentrate on the psychological. I mean, you can be very, very technical, but if you're not confident in your abilities in games or confident with your decision making, it almost doesn't matter how technical you are.
Absolutely.
So we very much focus a lot on emotional control, mental strength, you know, being able to bounce back after you know, maybe an error, whatever it is. Those things are so important and vital in development.
Yeah, I mean, goalkeeping is an unforgiving position. It's tough.
Yeah,
it's you know, starts from in you don't want it to, from a negative place. You're getting scored on, you're making mistakes. You know, if you, I agree with you, and I've seen it in so many goalkeepers where they can be so sound and so solid in everything, but one mistake or one goal and they've fallen apart on you. And now it doesn't matter that technically or tactically you're sound. Now that affects everything else you're going to do now.
Yeah. Like,
you know, and so it's, you know, it's so important.
Yeah. I, you know, this is one thing that, you know, I was so proud of with my players was this year, our boys have had ECNL for a few years now, but our girls were new, completely new to ECNL. And our first weekend, of course, you get Atlanta teams and you're like, oh, like this is going to be difficult. But, you know, I and this goes into collaborating with coaches. So, you know, leading into that weekend, I'm like, look, you know, we have to be on the same page here. This is going to be difficult. We're going to be under constant pressure. And it's going to be difficult to, you know, our players are going to have a hard time dealing with it, especially the goalkeepers. And as you know, like goalkeepers immediately feel like they made an error, even if it, you know, they couldn't do anything about it. So, player management, especially for the goalkeepers, I had several hour conversations with how we were going to manage this in games and how we were going to deal with our players conceding goals. So in the games, when we did concede, you know, it was kind of like, you know, everyone looks at you kind of thing, like, what is she going to do? Like, what's her reaction? And I had to act unfazed. I did that so they were like, okay, maybe I didn't make a mistake. You know, let me keep going on here. And what ended up happening was with all of the goalkeepers, like even if they did make an error in the game, they ended up following up with like big time saves. Yeah. And it honestly had to do with like, I trust you, you can do this. Mm-hmm. When you had that approach, they kept going and they weren't timid. And they ended up making like crucial saves for us within those games. And it was just a month of, you know, me working with them and trying to create this culture. So like, you know, the psychological also has a lot to do with how are your coaches handling when you concede a goal? Do they act upset? Do they act like it's your fault? Or they're like, it's okay, let's go. Let's do this again. Keep playing.
Exactly.
It's things like that. Exactly. So we're very conscious of how we do that in game management.
I think that, you know, Kristen, you just brought up something really good in regards to the fact that, like, for instance, I think, Saskia, that, and this is something I tried to do at the club level, and you know, maybe things have changed a little bit, you know, in the years since I was at this club, but like trying to do continuing education for our team coaches on how to work with goalkeepers. And I've seen so many times, Saskia, when it's like try to do some sort of clinic and they're like they're just focused on that technical tactical as opposed to like how to work with your goalkeepers, with your team. Like and that's not just about the X's and O's, but like I've seen so many coaches, especially at the foundational ages, throw up their arms in the air, you know, at State Cup, you know, because you know little Molly, you know, the ball went through little Molly's legs.
But what coaches need to realize is how that is perceived by the field players. Right.
Absolutely.
And so if the coach can attack a goalkeeper, if they can yell at them, if they can place blame, the field players feel empowered to do it as well. And so now that goalkeeper is on their own island and it's just bringing them down and messing with their psyche even more. And I've numerous times had issues with coaches because I've seen their players berating a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And I have brought the team in and said enough. And I was just like, unacceptable. Nobody is berating you because you just missed five shots, you know, and stuff like that. Everybody's moved on. But it comes from the top down. And so when that coach is throwing their hands in there, the team sees it. And they think they can do that. And now you have a horrible negative culture on your team.
Yeah. And I think like with here, like the slide that you have up, like bridging the gap, like, you know, we've had those discussions as a staff and how we were going to handle this and manage it. But like you just said, like it does come from, you know, the leadership the whole way down, from the top the whole way down. And honestly, like our players, they'll look at me, I go to the games and they'll look at me and see what my reaction is. And they'll be like, okay, yeah, you know what? It is all right. So they're impressionable. And if you seem phased by it, they're going to be phased by it and annoyed by it. So I think as coaches in general, I think we need to do a better job with our game management and our reaction to certain issues that happen in the games or mistakes that may happen. It's, you're going to make mistakes. We have to move on with it.
And it goes to parents too. Like if the coach is acting that way, the player's acting that way, the parents are acting that way.
Yeah.
And who the heck wants to play goalkeeper when everybody's on your back?
No, <know? laughs> that's why we have a lack of them. And that's why, you know, I always hear we don't have enough goalkeepers in these age groups. Well, it's because we don't make it seem like it's fun to play the position, you know, like we may think it's the best position in the world and it is, but like, we love it. I think they're rock stars, but at the end of the day, is everyone else making them feel that way? So it's not just like a program philosophy and culture. It has to change with club wide.
Agreed.
You know, and I think, you know, I love what you just put here in regards to like reaction and communication with goalkeepers during games. Obviously, we just talked about the reaction.
Yeah.
But the communication aspect, because I've seen a lot of times, Kristen, you know, at halftime, I'll be walking by these youth fields. And the only time they mention anything about the goalkeeper is when a mistake happened and say, hey, blah, 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 you need to blah, blah, blah. But they never say, hey, fantastic save on blah, blah, blah. Or like, way to handle that cross right there. That really helped us out. Or like, way to talk to everybody. That's really making everybody, you know, be on the right page or whatever. So I think team coaches need to recognize that they, because I think a lot of times just team coaches, they only notice the goalkeeper when it's something negative.
Yeah.
Well, I also think that it's, how are you breaking down that? Like, and I agree with you, like the goalkeeper comes in at halftime and, you know, it's they're breaking down a team, seeing what they do. But how are you discussing this with the team? Okay, so we let up a goal here. These are the this is how we have to help little Sally. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we put Sally into a bad position. So now taking off that negative from her and saying, okay, defense, we need to, you know, we push them into cover or whatever it is that broke down the situation to give the goal. Don't just kind of ignore the fact that Sally let up a goal and go on to other things. Like you have to identify those things. You have to bring that person into a team structure. Even if you are saying, look, we let up a goal, but say, this is why, you know? And so everybody realized they're responsible for it. Not just little Sally's responsible for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think one of the things right here, you know, Kristen, that you've got right here that I really like is advocating for the goalkeepers, because as the goalkeeping director, if we're not advocating for the goalkeepers, then who is advocating for the goalkeepers?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think advocating for them is so important. You know, even if it's, your goalkeepers are around you or not, like I've been in so many meetings where you're constantly hearing about the field players this, field players that, let's do this for them. And then I'm always saying, well, okay, so what about the goalkeepers? What are we going to do for them? When are we going to do this for them? When are we going to offer this for them? So it's not just advocating when they're around you. It's advocating all the time for them. Because sometimes, you know, it is a one position on the field, but it's a very crucial position and it shouldn't be overlooked as much as it is.
I mean, it comes down, I know this sounds like kind of, but it comes down to everything. Like at UCLA, we were allowed to ordering gloves. I know that sounds crazy. But it was like, oh, yeah, we ordered some gloves. I'm like, what? You know what I mean? Like, you can't just order some gloves. Like, talk to me about it. Let me have a conversations with the goalkeepers and let's figure out what type of gloves they prefer to wear. I didn't just order you some cleats. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yes.
So different.
It's important, but to identify that those things are important too, that they're seen.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it means something. And I think that there's just such a broad spectrum where they're just forgotten.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say this, you know, when it comes to, and for any directors listening out there, and by that, I don't mean goalkeeping directors, but you know, team directors out there, you know, of clubs, is that you have to look at this as it's not an add-on to your club. And I think a lot of clubs look at it as like, hey, and guess what? We also offer goalkeeping. The same thing as like, we have brunches on Sunday. You know, it's it's not like a perk. Like we have locker rooms. Yeah. Like you also have goalkeeper. Like it should be a requirement.
So true. Yeah, it should be.
And budget wise, they look at it that way too. They're like, well, you know, they're like, you know, we need to make some cuts. So I think we're going to cut down on goalkeeper training right there because we want to add some yoga on Fridays. I think that'd be great for everybody. And so it's just, again, it's not just advocating for the goalkeepers, but it's advocating with the club for what the goalkeepers' yes. needs are too.
Mm-hmm. And again, it comes back to the club, the environment that you're in. They have to see your vision and they have to agree with it. Like I've been given full reign and freedom on how I want to develop my goalkeepers. And honestly, a majority of the resources I've been asking for, I have been given because they're seeing the improvements increase just within a short period of time.
I think one of the biggest things is whether it's field space. You know, you have to advocate for the goalkeepers. It's like, oh yeah, but we're going to use this goal and the field players are going to use this goal. You guys can go over there, figure it out. And I would sit there and be like, guys, I need an 18. Like I at least need lines and something like you can't put us in the corner and expect these kids to develop. You know, it's imperative that they have certain things and advocating for that. Don't just accepting it. Well, you know, there are 20 field players and 2 goalkeepers, so I get it. No, you don't get it. What I get is you can't come back to me and say, why isn't little Paul getting it? Oh, because you sat me in a corner over here where the field's uneven and I have a pop-up goal.
Yeah.
But it kind of goes back to, Kristen, is that the fact is that, like, you know, you have to be proactive as a goalkeeping director, because otherwise, if you're passive, you're going to create a passive culture, you know, because it's not just about the culture of the goalkeepers, but it's the culture of the goalkeepers, how they're treated at the club. And so if you don't take the time to speak up or say, I need this, I need that, but you need to have a why, because I made the mistake of asking for things before and they're like, why? And I'm like, well, because I need it. And they go, that's not a good enough. I'm learning how, when you pitch, you need to have a why. just like with anything. So go ahead.
Absolutely. Oh, no, I was just agreeing with you. I mean, yeah, I think, you know, I've gotten better with that as well. I mean, sometimes, you know, you don't want to ask for things, but ultimately, if it's going to benefit your players and it's going to benefit the club, like, you need to advocate for those things. And I mean, again, but you also have to show, you can't just ask for things and you're not proving yourself and it's not proven successful. You have to follow up with the things that you're asking for. And as little as field space, like, you know, a lot of what goalkeepers are struggling in, you need more space.
Absolutely.
You know, building out the back, balls played over top, balls played through. You need space for those things. They can't just show up to a game, have been working on shot stopping within the 6-yard box, and then expect them to be able to execute in games within those areas and scenarios.
Yeah, I would also say don't be afraid to ask for players.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and this comes down to goalkeeper coaches out there. If you have a plan in place, if you have communication with the field player coaches and everything like that, that you said, hey, on Thursday at this practice, I need 4 players. Mm-hmm. Like, send them to me. This is what I want to work on based on what we've talked about with the goalkeepers. Send them to me. And then you're integrating field players with it. Mm-hmm. Your leg's not falling off because you're the only one kicking. And you go, but those are all things that you, if you advocate for and you show a why and a reason, it should happen.
Right. And I mentioned a little bit ago, like with our goalkeeping periodization, where it blends with the teams, right? Yeah. So when they go into team integration, they have already been working on live actions that will help them within the team integration, right? But there have been times where I've also collaborated with our team coaches and said, like, look, we need to work on these scenarios. And honestly, so do our field players. A lot of areas of the game that our goalkeepers struggle in, so do our field players.
Absolutely.
So what we have been doing is we'll have small groups where there will be a field player coach there and then me. So kind of everyone's getting to work on the same situations. And then I get to prioritize the goalkeeper's perspective and defensive perspective. And then the field player coaches will work on whatever other area we feel that the field players need to, you know, work on as well. So it's been really, really good. And it's just another area of where you see vast improvement in your goalkeepers in a short period of time because you're taking the time to do those things.
You know, and I think, you know, a good thing about that, Kristen, too, that I'm just looking at here, which I've never seen before, and I love this, is preparation for next level, not limited to one style of play or method, because I've never even thought of that before. But like, if you don't show the different pictures to the two goalkeepers, you know, at that youth level, they go to college and all of a sudden so-and-so coach plays this system. And they're like, well, at my club, we played a blah, blah, blah. And this is the only way I've ever played before. They're not going to be successful.
Yeah. So what I've been doing, and you know, I'll use an example with a couple of our goalkeepers that recently committed this year. So what we've been doing with our match analysis. So not only are we reviewing the match analysis from our games, but then we'll also take it a step further. And it's like, okay, so you committed to Notre Dame. Okay, perfect. So let's look at their style of play. Now, how can we help you be prepared for the next level?
Nice.
So it's kind of things, so we're taking it a step further and kind of helping them with not just being limited to the club style of play, but also helping them to get to the next level, and it almost being like a seamless, you know,
transition.
Change. Yeah, exactly.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Now, Kristen, do you have communication with the college in regards to that? Like,
you'll see them at like showcase. I mean, yes, there is like, we have had conversation. I've had conversations with their coaches about like things that we're working on with them. But also it's kind of just watching their games and talking to them at showcases. You know, it's a lot of the times they'll come and watch their games. You go and talk to them and like, is this helping them with what you guys have been working on, kind of thing. So it's just like open dialogue with the coaches.
Yeah. I know there's, I mean, there's a lot we can go through right here, guys. And so I don't want to take everybody's time. Kristen, are you good on time right now? You good on time?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Saskia, you good on time? Need to get out soon?
Well, Mike, you'll go for 3 hours. If like, yeah, we're fine.
Not with this voice right now.
Nice, okay. Mike. Nice.
Sorry. I thought I put the microphone away from my throat. So that's all right. That'll be edited out. Anyway, moving forward, what we got here, Kristen?
So I just came up with three key insights because, again, I'm new to this club and I've only been here for 8 months. So basically I've been tracking each individual's improvements in certain areas. And collectively I've found like majority of our goalkeepers have improved in their mentality, have improved in their composure and emotional control, being able to bounce back from making mistakes, you know, in a shorter period of time. And then ultimately like their accountability. They're more open to exploratory learning. They're open to watching themselves, analyzing film, and not being afraid to watch themselves make mistakes in games. Mm-hmm. So like these are three key areas where I feel like I've seen a lot of improvement in my players just from creating a positive environment where they feel like it's safe and they feel like they're not going to get yelled at for making a mistake in a game or in training. So, you know, I think that it's been amazing so far, and my goalkeepers have really, really improved in a lot of areas, but I think this is major in my opinion.
Before we lose Saskia, I want to bring up accountability here because this is obviously a conversation that's been happening quite a bit in regards to micromanagement. And you have in here, Kristen and Saskia, I don't know if you see this, ownership of the recruiting process.
Yeah.
It's not mom and dad finding you a college. It's, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to go. How can you help me? What do I need to work on? Blah, blah, blah. I can't tell you how many times I've had parents come up to me and be like, so I, you know, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm thinking. And I talk to the kid. It's like, I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. And it's like, okay, so who's this for exactly?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're not telling you to diss your parents, you know what I mean? But you have to be part of the process, and you know, at the end of the day, this is your choice and it is what you want. And we want to hear your voices. and those voice that lets us know that you're all in. And, you know, if I'm talking, don't even get into parents, that's a hot topic in soccer right now. it's true. But, you know, love you guys, but you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. But, you know, because this is the next step and the next transition. And now with players going pro younger and younger and everything, yeah. maybe not staying in college as well, like how a part of this process are you? Mom, I don't want to be on the phone with mom and dad all the time. I don't want to have to go through them to talk to you. Like this is a process that if you want it, you have to show it and you have to be a part of.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of look at it this way, Kristen, like if you're driving to the session, like then I'm dealing with you. If you're at that point, you're driving to the session. I mean, you're driving to the session. Meanwhile, I'm still getting calls from your mom or dad saying, hey, you know, so-and-so has a dentist appointment, but blah, 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 or whatever. It's like, dude, you have a phone. You can text me. You can email me. Like you're not eight. You know,
yeah.
and I think, you know, and even at 8 years old, you can take a certain amount of accountability, you know, maybe not emailing and calling and texting and stuff like that, but you can ask questions at practice. What do I need to work on? You know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, like college coaches and pro coaches are looking to see how mature you are and responsible Absolutely. You are. And if your parents are, you know, are writing emails, they're going to know, or if they're going to be, if your parents are going to be calling on behalf of them, like there comes a point where they just want to know the player. Mm-hmm. They want to know if they're able to, are you coachable? Are you responsible? Are you going to mesh well with the team? And if you aren't taking rein on that process, like they're not going to recruit you.
No.
So, you know, I've had so many conversations with a lot of my players when it comes to what do you need to do for a college recruiting? What steps do you need to take? How do you communicate to your college coaches? I've honestly had like not many conversations with parents about this. You know, it's mostly I've been talking to the players and a lot of them have been, you know, taking the ideas and strategies that I've presented to them and they're doing it. So it's been really great to see.
Yeah. And you need that because like once you're in college, you know, it's on you,
you know,
it's on you to get to practice. It's on you to take care of yourself. It's on you to be responsible and accountable. And if right up to that process, you're not doing it, then we as college coaches, when I was a college coach, know that that transition is going to become incredibly difficult for you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I will say this, you know, kind of ending on this right here. I think that a lot of the times when somebody sends an email, a parent sends an email or something is being done by the parents, it kind of reflects on the fact that, you know, the kid's been brought up in an environment where it's to like them doing the laundry. It's the same thing. It's like, oh, can you just get this? Can you take care of this for me? Type of a thing, as opposed to ever being taught. So I don't always blame it on the player. I think a lot of the times it's the
conditioning.
Environment. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And very which means so. that goalkeeper, when they get to college, like Saskia was saying, that's going to be the goalkeeper that's going to be looking at you for all the answers because they've been brought up in an environment where they're spoon-fed the answers rather than having to figure it out.
Or themselves. When something goes wrong, they don't take responsibility and stand up for themselves. If they do something wrong, if something goes on and your parents are the one cleaning up your mess for you, like take responsibility for it. Like, and I would have so much more respect for you and understand that you're going in this front. Hey coach, I didn't show up to practice because I was hanging with my friends at 7-Eleven. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, do you know what I mean? Don't take responsibility for it. You know, and that's all part of what we went back to in the beginning. And that's that growth. And that's that, you know, making the right culture for kids on and off the field.
Absolutely. Yeah.
As we wrap up, and Kristen, thanks for taking all the time to put this whole little presentation together.
Yeah. I mean, thank you so much for having me.
This is awesome. Any advice for any young coaches out there who are going into their first interview process for a youth club?
Oh, I mean, I think I've already said this before, but just, you know, figure out what's the culture, what's the dynamic of the club. I mean, does your philosophy mesh well with it? Otherwise, you know, it's going to be constant battle. So that's my honestly my biggest suggestion and advice to them.
I think that's great. Mm-hmm. Saskia, anything you want to add to that?
Establish your needs and your boundaries. Like, you know, like we've talked about, make sure that you're not passive and, you know, speak up. You're brought in there for a reason. And if they want to see development, if they want to see your goalkeepers excel, tell them what you need and work to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think a lot of people, the reason they fail at the job is because they didn't communicate what they needed. And then a year later, it's like, well, this is not working out. We need to find somebody else. That's kind of on you too. Well, Kristen, this is awesome. If people want to connect with you about KRS goalkeeping or Florida Premier, these are the best places to connect with you right here.
Yeah. Yep. Across all social media platforms.
Are you sure about that? Because I'm pretty sure you have a union.
Oh, not Florida Premier. The union. Yeah. The union. we need to discuss that. You mentioned that before, but we need to get on there.
Absolutely. You do.
Yes, yeah. you definitely
signing
do,
up
guys.
right now.
Love it.
You have an account.
I do a personal account, but we might as well do a Florida Premier.
Oh, okay.
Well.
So you're gonna do. Well, guys, by the way, so anybody out there who doesn't know what we're talking about there, we are talking about the union. It is a private, safe space away from the vitriol of social media to connect, engage, educate, entertain. No longer just public communities. We also have private communities out there for different camps and clinics. So if your organization or you as a personal person want to start your own community there, reach out to us. You can do that at contact@insidethe18media.com or at Goalkeeper Podcast on the union. Also, if you have a guest suggestion or a topic suggestion, also shout out to all you guys who've been supporting the union, whether it's just with content or monetarily. Shout out to, honestly, the people who've been supporting monetarily. Absolutely massive for us. Helps keep the lights on, helps keep the platform free and available for those who may not be able to afford it otherwise. So really, really massive shout out to you guys. If you want to still do that right here, you can do that. There's the little link right there. It makes it very easy. Our goal is $1,000 by April, and I think we can definitely do it. It'll definitely allow a lot of people to provide you some great content. Saskia, before we go, really, really cool news about you. You're going to South Africa next week.
I am going to South Africa for a day. Yeah. I am. I'm joining the FIFA to start. Well, they've already started, but the trophy tour for the Women's World Cup. So I'll be in Johannesburg Tuesday, Wednesday. Really excited about it, joining FIFA Legends and going to do some clinics and everything and just really kick this Women's World Cup off with a bang. I'm really excited about it. Long flight, but I'm really excited about it.
So if anybody's in the Johannesburg area, make sure to check that out. We'll put it in the show notes so you can find out all the information about that. And also, you know, obviously still a long way to go, Kristen, but mm-hmm. I just saw the news today that they are going to be increasing the money for the Women's World Cup this year.
153 million.
I saw that. Amazing. Yeah. I mean.
And they didn't go with the Saudi company. I can say whatever I want. It's my podcast. So
go on. Preach.
I think that's good. They're great strides and steps. Guys, we didn't even have winners money in 99. So
it was like Sunday League. You got a t-shirt.
Yeah, I still have it too.
Wow.
Well, not from FIFA anyway. We did from the organizing committee, but not from FIFA. So the strides are huge and let's keep it going.
Yeah. Amazing. No, absolutely. So that is great. And also, you know, Saskia, congratulations, obviously, you know, Paramount Plus, CBS, you know, you guys are starting your coverage very soon. Do you know when your first game is?
The first weekend in April. So I'm not doing opening weekend and Bally Sports SoCal. So got that schedule too. We'll be on the broadcast chain and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
Are you going to be going to Fort Lauderdale? And what is it like? Yeah, you are.
Yes. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Shh. We're not actually at the games.
Yeah.
Well, breaking the fourth wall. You're breaking the fourth wall.
The CBS ones we are, but my favorite thing is having to go, me and Mark Rogandino having to go for Bally Sports West SoCal to Vista in Fort Lauderdale when the game is here in L.A.
Mind-boggling. It's so funny. When I first heard that, I was like, what? How does that make sense?
Well, I have a great story about that, because my very first broadcast, we were playing, Angel City was playing against Orlando, and they were like, this is last season, they were like, Sasuke, we want you to join Mark, do the broadcasting. And I was like, oh, okay. So they're like, you have to go to Florida. I'm like, oh, great, I'm going to the game, right? So I was like, you know, getting prepared and everything, and I was telling like friends I was going to be in Orlando and everything like that. And I land, I'm in Fort Lauderdale. I'm like, I don't understand what's going on. And I was like, oh, it's out of the studio. Mind blowing to me.
Yeah, so funny.
So everybody, there's going to be plenty of opportunities to listen to Saskia's voice, not just on the podcast here, but
all over the television. If you hear me call the Kansas City game and then I'm calling the San Diego game an hour later, I didn't get on like the supersonic jet and fly between the game. I walked next door. So.
Oh my gosh. Well, Saskia, we'll let you go and get your passport ready to go so that you can head out South Africa. Very, very excited. Then hopefully you'll be going to other countries as well too. You never know.
It's all great. And I'm really excited. I'm so excited about Paramount Plus, and I'll leave it on this. After I retired and everything, I always wanted to be in broadcasting. And I thought like that window was gone back then. They didn't hire females to broadcast, only Julie Foudy and stuff like that, who is an icon, and I love her to death, and she's my sister. And I thought that opportunity passed me by, you know, as time went on and younger players came up, I was like, there's no way. And with Bally Sports West and Angel City, they gave me that opportunity. And now I'm full-fledged at CBS and Paramount Plus, and it's a second act. And, you know, I don't think I'd be here without Inside the 18, like, schooling me every week. So I'm super excited about it and super thankful, and I hope you guys like what I do.
We're excited to hear your perspective.
Thanks. My opinionated ass. Yeah.
Well, on that note, guys, that's all the time on Inside the 18, and we are out. Later, guys.
Bye.